Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, June 17th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey. Technology you can trust. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks,
pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We've got a great episode lined up for you today. It is Monday, which means we have Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, here. He's going to talk about heat-related emergencies and, of course, along with that, keeping your chickens cool in the summertime and different ways to do that. So we're really looking forward to welcoming Peter Brown on here just shortly, but I have a little host chat to share with you. First things first, and wanted to remind everybody that we're getting awfully close to the second quarter Power to the Poultry Tour with the Chicken Whisperer, sponsored by Tractor Supply. In fact, we'll be hitting the road a week from tomorrow. Yep, our life story, hitting the road. We need to maybe On the Road Again by Willie Nelson needs to be our theme song instead of In the Mood with the chickens. Me and Jen were trying to figure it up yesterday since Lily was born on March 15th. I think we've only been home. It's been about 3 months. We've only been home maybe 2 weeks, and that wasn't consecutive. So, but we love being on the road. It's fun. We travel as a family. We try to hit some fun places for the kids. You know, if it's within distance of a work trip, but nonetheless, we will be heading out a week from tomorrow on the second quarter Chicken Whisperer Tour with Tractor Supply. We'll be hitting 5 locations in 5 days, North and South Carolina this time. Back in February, we were Florida and Alabama, but we've got Wednesday, the 26th, Anderson, South Carolina, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the local Tractor Supply there, and then on Thursday, the 27th, we're going to be in Easley, South Carolina, also 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at their local Tractor Supply in Easley. And then, of course, let's see, Friday we'll be in Weaverville, North Carolina, just a hair north of Asheville, North Carolina. That'll be Friday night, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then, of course, big show on Saturday. We'll have a 9 a.m. live broadcast on location, and then a 10 to 12 Getting Started with Backyard Poultry workshop there at the Asheville, North Carolina Tractor Supply. That'll be Saturday. And then, of course, Sunday, we'll head over to Newton, North Carolina, Sunday, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Newton Tractor Supply. Every event includes a book signing, Q&A segment, and, of course, a Getting Started with Backyard Poultry workshop from yours truly. Really looking forward to this trip as well. We'll be heading out on Tuesday. I'll have our first event again next the following Wednesday. So a week from tomorrow, we'll be hitting the road again. So got to enjoy. Also, next week, of course, next Monday, we'll have Peter Brown on. I will let you know then kind of the radio show schedule for those days based on our traveling and when we'll be on the road, when we'll be able to broadcast. But nonetheless, we'll try to bring you as many shows as we always do as possible. Looking forward to that. And I'm really looking forward to meeting a lot of fans. Speaking of fans, let me send a real quick shout out to all of those in the chat room. Thank you very much. Thanks to those who are listening live, hundreds of you that can't access the chat room because of your IT department, or maybe Blog Talk Radio is just being a pain in the rear end today, and you try to get in the chat room, but it just spins and spins and spins and spins. I won't let you in. I apologize about that. So thanks to our live listeners in the chat room, our live listeners that can't get in the chat room. Want to send a shout out to all the homeschoolers that listen to the show on a regular basis that incorporate the show in their curriculum. Thank you so much. Hope you're enjoying your summer, homeschoolers. Of course, all of the folks that listen to the archive, including the over-the-road truck drivers we hear. Thank you very much for tuning in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week when you can, while you're on the road. Keep the rubber on the road and drive safe out there. And last but not least, all the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this radio show live daily to their customers. We thank you very much for doing that. We hope business is doing well for you. So that sends out the shout-outs. You know, it's a funny story this morning. I went out, had to run a few errands, had to take my official Chicken Whisperer garb, my summer garb. You know, normally, if it's not too hot, let's say between September and now, it's the good old overalls. Overalls and the embroidered shirt with the CW hat, gotta love it. But now it's getting a little hot. Set up and break down and inside the stores and things like that, wear the hot overalls and it's 100 degrees. So I go casual when we tour through the summer. Some nice khaki shorts with a kind of a short sleeve embroidered shirt. I had to take all those to the cleaners and get them ready for the tour today. And Jen wanted me to stop by. She's been researching some easy recipes for the RV. And we try to eat in the RV as much as we can to keep costs down. And when we're on the road and on tour, and I was telling her the other day when we were on this last trip, I was like, you know, it's not the, you know, I cook anyway. I'm normally the cook of the house, and you have all the comforts at home in the RV, of course. But it's just like, I wish there was some easier recipes, things we could mix things up a little bit, where we wouldn't have to take all these spices and all the ingredients and things like that. So we were thinking about getting an RV cookbook, but she got online and tried to find some. She got online and tried to find some recipes. So apparently, she found five or six with minimal ingredients. You know, three. In fact, I saw a cookbook that for RV cookbook, no more than five ingredients each recipe. So I almost bought it, but I was like, let me look online and see what I can find first. But she did, and the story I'm getting to is she needed some Reynolds Wrap aluminum foil. I guess she's going to kind of put it in a pan, put all the ingredients in the aluminum foil, and make a little tin out of it. Anyway, so she wanted to cook tonight, and I think we have just about everything. So we didn't have any aluminum foil here at the old homestead house. So I went into town, taking the laundry and things like that. And actually, I don't know if I shared this with you several months ago, and it was probably several months ago. I may have, I may have not. I know I told a few people. But I said, you know what? The Piggly Wiggly's on the way home. I'll stop in Piggly Wiggly, and I'll get a thing of aluminum foil. So not thinking, I go in there, I see my next-door neighbor who I thought he retired, but he said, all I did was sit all day and eat and watch TV, so I couldn't handle that, so they hired me back. So now he's back at Piggly Wiggly. Anyway, I talked to him a little bit, found the aisle with the aluminum foil, picked up some aluminum foil. Yep, okay, so I did mention this on the radio show. Thank you, Christmas Chick, long-time listener, regular listener. So I got the aluminum foil, I got up to the register, and I got ready to do the old debit credit card thing, and right before I swiped, my memory popped into play, and the lady looked at me and said, there's something wrong. I said, yep, I'm not going to buy this. I said, I promised myself that I would no longer spend a dime in this place, because the last time I was here, which was several months ago, I went to buy, I think we were going over to some neighbors to socialize, and so I went and bought a pie. I think I got a frozen pie. Frozen key lime pie, and I don't know, maybe some whipped cream or something like that. That's all I bought. It was about $8-$9 worth of stuff. And I went to scan my card, and I did my card, and then the lady at the register said, oh, wait just a minute. And she turned, and it's all computerized now. The registers are like a computer, desktop computer with a keyboard, and then they have the monitor sitting up kind of high, about face level, so you can kind of see. Actually, you can see the weather while you're sitting there. We can see the prices ring up, and there's a video camera right there on top of the monitor. And so what happened was, she says, oh, let me turn this a little bit so I can get you in the picture. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she says, oh, anytime anybody ever writes a check or they pay by credit or debit card, it takes a picture. So I asked her, I said, so if you would not have had to move that camera towards me to get me in frame, I would have never known walking in here and walking out that you're taking my picture without my permission because of this issue. And she says, yeah, that's pretty much it. So however many times I've been here before, you've snapped my picture without my permission. And where does that picture go? Where is it filed? Is it in some database? What's the deal? So, of course, the register lady didn't have any of that information. So I said, well, I'll never be back. I already processed the card. I said, well, I will never shop here again. Well, that was kind of in the back of my mind. But right before I scanned that card today, I remembered. I said, you know, wait a minute. No, I can't. I promised myself that I would never do business here again, even though it was only like $5. I said, because the procedures y'all have of taking my picture when I use my debit or credit card or write you a check without my knowledge. I wonder how many people shop here that don't even know that. Now, I was going to write the paper. I haven't yet. I was going to share it with one of the ladies at church that works at the – has her own little kind of online newspaper here in the county. I don't know if I mentioned that to her or not. So I said, I'm sorry. And she says, oh, well, sir, that's so if someone steals your credit card or debit card or writes a check or maybe writes a bad check, we know who they are so we can catch them. I said, okay. I said, I guess you're not familiar with the old quote from Benjamin Franklin that I believe it was Benjamin Franklin that said something to the effect of people willing to give up freedom for security deserves neither. Okay, and I told her that. I said, you know, I believe it was Benjamin Franklin that quoted many, many years ago that people willing to give up freedoms for security deserve neither. I said, I just don't feel like for whatever reason you should take my picture because I have no idea where it's going. So anyway, it was a pet peeve of mine. So I walked out. I didn't give him a dime, and I went to another little local store, kind of on my way home, a little convenience store. Probably paid a little bit more than Piggly Wiggly, but that's okay. I made a promise to myself to never ever spend another dime in there, because who knows how many times I had been in there. They took my picture without even telling me, without me even knowing. Okay, so maybe not a serious issue to many of y'all listeners, but to me, it's just it's a pet peeve, and it's just something that that's near and dear to me. Regarding that, so and I told her today. So I don't even think I haven't even been in a store in Atlanta where they do this. And here we're in East Bumble, in the middle of nowhere, and they've got this high tech. So I'm like, nope, sorry, nope. And she says, okay, thank you. And I walked out. And I don't know if the manager standing behind the counter actually heard me or not regarding that either. But maybe I need to follow up with the newspaper to at least let everybody else know in the county that shops there that hey, you don't even know it. But whenever you use a debit card or a credit card or write them a check, your picture is taken without your permission and or your knowledge that it's even happening. So anyway, that was an interesting little trip today. But I did remember and basically walked out immediately and after telling her and trying to educate her on the fact that, hey, we shouldn't have to give up our freedoms for security, if you want to consider that security, I guess, of trying to nab somebody that may have stolen my debit or credit card. So anyway, it's a pretty interesting thing. So I wanted to share that with you today, Wales, along with the Chicken Whisper Tour. So we're so glad that you joined us today on this Monday. Monday means Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, and we're going to head over to the switchboard right now. Great topic today. We're talking about heat-related illness, how to recognize, mainly, and also how to prevent. If you can kind of prevent heat-related emergencies, then maybe you won't have to deal and treat for heat-related emergencies. Someone last night on our Facebook page posted that's a great topic. It's great timing because the heat index is over 100 here, and it is important. As we've always said on this radio show, over 5 years, over 800 episodes, heat is far more detrimental to your chickens than the cold ever will be. So if you'll let me go off on a little tangent here, I could completely appreciate and understand a whole heck of a lot more you putting an air conditioner in your coop in the summertime than a heater in your coop in the wintertime. And many of our longtime listeners know my view on heaters and coops, and it hasn't changed in a decade, and it's still not going to change. But when you talk to somebody who has a heater in their coop, 99% of the time, unnecessary heater in the coop, dangerous heater in the coop in the wintertime. If you mention to them about putting a window air conditioning unit in the chicken coop, they'd look at you like you were stupid or crazy. You're putting air conditioner in the coop. So why do you have a heater in the coop in the wintertime? Heat is far more detrimental to the chickens than the winter ever will be, the cold ever will be. So are you not doing it the opposite? Now, if someone told me, I got an air conditioner in my coop, I might say, hey, that's not for me. Thanks so much. But I guess I could grasp that a little bit more than a heater in the coop as far as, you know, caring for your chickens, wanting to – because one lady says, I'll sleep better at night knowing my chickens are warm and toasty. Okay, I get it. But she didn't do anything regarding keeping her chickens cool in the summertime. So I could, again, almost grasp even more – I guess, better the fact that if I talked to somebody that had an air conditioner in their coop, but you wouldn't, I guess, need an air conditioner in your coop if you, again, you know, hey, shade, cool water, different things like that. Shade's probably the 100% most important thing. But nonetheless, we'll be talking about the day with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. So let's go over here to the switchboard. We'll bring Peter on the show right now. Let's give him a big Chicken Whisperer welcome, everybody. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing?
I'm sweeter than snuff and half as dusty. And we just had Father's Day, so in honor of my father, he used to say I'm finer than frog hair split four ways. So I'm hanging in there. I'm doing pretty good. We're enjoying this 10 days or so we actually have here at the homestead, but we're getting vamped up to head out again, so there's always something to do. You know, we get back and, you know, mowing and weed eating, and we got a hair of the garden. The grass is going crazy, and weed eating and tilling and all that kind of stuff, and just getting thing all ready. And about time we're finished, Peter, and we can appreciate our hard work, you know, pinching the hanging baskets out front, the old buds and things like that. About time we're done to sit down and say, okay, oh, we're caught up now and time to appreciate what we've done. It'll be time to hit the road. And then we go away and then we got to come back and we'll go through the whole routine again. But we were looking at the schedule, and I think after this upcoming tour next week for about 7 days, we're hoping, unless we just get a wild hair and choose to do something, we're hoping we may be around for the month of July. And the main reason for that is so we can actually harvest out of the garden. Last couple of years, we kind of went on the road during harvest time, and we did get a lot out of the garden, but there was a lot that went to waste because we weren't here to pick it. So we're kind of making a mental note to be here as much as we can during peak picking season so we can capitalize on all the great bountiful food that our garden will provide us. So that's hopefully nothing in July, but who knows? We just never know. We might like, okay, we've filled another freezer this year, so we'll just tell all of our neighbors to go help yourself. We're hitting the road and knock yourself out and get all you can out of that. So we've already gotten several cucumbers and several squash, a couple of tomatoes. The corn's looking good, and the snap beans are full of blooms. I suspect in the next 5 to 10 days we'll be having snap beans coming out of our ears, and the rest of the beans and peas will follow. And I guess the slowest thing right now is the okra. It's about 8 or 9 inches tall, and the grass around it is probably that tall, if not taller. So we tilled around it yesterday, and I harrowed with the tractor around most everything that I could get to with that big machine, and then tilled down the rows. But we got as close as we could without having to just get down there with our hands and pull, which will probably be the next step once in the evening it cools off. But okra's slow to, and of course we got some irrigation out there. We're hoping it'll rain this evening, so we'll get. But we've had enough rain, so I haven't had to really turn the irrigation on. But so it's just about picking time. But thank you for joining us. I was observing my chickens yesterday when it was quite hot, and of course, as I have for years, like many others, you know, like you always advocate, Peter, get a 5-gallon bucket, turn it upside down, have a seat there, and observe your chickens, and just kind of see what they're doing on those hot days. Are they digging down into the ground, kind of taking a dust bath to get, you know, down in the ground where it's nice and cool? Are they in the shade? Are they under the coop? Are they in the coop? That's one thing I was going to talk about, having an air conditioner in the coop. You know, if you think about it, if you're out there looking at your chickens, really most of the time, I would say, your chickens are outside. You know, they're inside when they're laying in the nest box, and then they're inside at night when they're roosting and sleeping, and that's really about it. The rest of the time, mine are out scratching around, looking for bugs, taking dust baths, hanging out in the shade, and that's it. So even if you ran an air conditioner in your coop all day long, all your chickens are probably not just hanging out in there; they're out and about. So, unlike at night when they're all in there roosting. But today's a great topic. We've got a lot of response from it, and we're looking to hear what you have to say about heat and heat-related illnesses and how to prevent those.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about heat that I think people don't understand is that. The biggest thing you're going to get out of heat, for the most part, is it's going to kill, and it's a relative. It can be a relatively quick killer as well. That being said, the stress that it causes, causes the bird to produce more corticosteroids, which are a survival tactic that they use often, the fight or flight syndrome, which in turn diminishes the ability of their immune system. Actually, it negates the immune system to a degree to fight off diseases. So if a bird, for instance, had been exposed to a mild respiratory issue, and then you threw the heat stress in on top of that, you know, they may come down with, you know, any particular disease, coccidiosis, respiratory issues, or whatever it is, because of the heat. So in that respect, other than outright heat death, heat prostration, the heat prostration thing, which is near death, severely dehydrated, loss of weight, all of these things, egg production suffers dramatically during the heat. Egg quality suffers dramatically during the heat. Less feed being consumed as a general rule, more water. The white of the egg tends to be more watery. Egg production seems to drop. We can have shell issues because of the lack of feed, not because you're not giving it to them, because in many, many cases they don't want to eat it when it's so hot out. So the ramifications of hot weather can be many-fold. Just depends on how you manage that, and we're more interested, from my perspective today, on how to mitigate these things, get rid of them, straighten it out, fix it, and prevent it from happening. You know, I, from time to time, and just recently saw a posting by somebody that I didn't respond to, that, you know, they had lost a bird or two from the heat, and it's so unnecessary. I just can't understand, you know, why people wouldn't think about it ahead of time. If there's nothing else that you're going to do in your life, is when you have animals that you're responsible for, is to think ahead, think of what's coming next. We just got out of winter, and some places the winter was more severe than others. Some people had to take, you know, different actions this past year during the winter than they've had to take in many years, due to, you know, cold, snow, and so on and so forth. So heat is no different. Heat, in your opening statement, you made the statement about the tolerance heat versus cold. And there's quite a reasoning for that. The temperature differential, considering a bird being, their temperature can vary. That's not a, their temperature isn't constant. And but that being said, you're looking at, you know, 105, 106, 107, 104, 104, 105, 106, whatever degrees Fahrenheit. The lethal dose of heat leaves you a very small. Let's say you go out just for argument's sake. And we'll make this a thing where you go out and you take the temperature of all your birds, and they're all at the higher end. They're all at 106, every one of them. You pick them up, 106, 106, 106, okay? Well, you only have about a 7-degree spread before mortality starts. You see, they are so intolerant to heat versus cold. Uh-huh. Now, if you take that same group of birds that are 106, 107 degrees, and you put them in a cold environment, okay, we start looking at a lethal core body temperature being somewhere around 75 degrees, give or take a few degrees either way. That's a huge difference. That is a huge difference. I mean, you know, that's what, 31, 32 degree difference. So the tolerance to cold is four times greater than the tolerance to heat, so to speak. And so therein lies the problem. When heat comes around and they do not adjust to the changes, many areas of the country, we've been saying it for years now, we don't really have a spring as we used to know it. We went from winter almost right into summer in many areas of the country. Birds do not adapt very well to that. They don't like it. They're used to more of the types of temperatures that we would have, a little bit warmer, cooler, wet spring going into a drier, maybe a little bit warmer and continually getting warmer summer. And so the huge temperature changes that we see, I know in my area here alone, over the weekend on Friday and Saturday, the temperatures were down real low, and now they're spiking back up. Humidity's back. The one opportunity to get outside and really do anything where you didn't have to deal with the humidity and the heat was Friday and Saturday. And even as the end of the day came on Saturday, the temperatures were back up. Yesterday, up close to 89 degrees again, and you know that kind of thing. Cooled down a little bit last night. It's that yo-yo effect that has them all discombobulated, so to speak. And so all of that plays into the overall health of the bird, the constant up, down, and all of those things. Certainly whatever pathogens they may be exposed to, whether it be a respiratory issue, whether it be an intestinal issue. Coccidiosis, for me, it's in some ways it's like beating a dead horse, and in other ways I am taken back by, certainly everybody doesn't listen to the show. Maybe some of them should, but I continually deal with coccidiosis issues across the board, with all kinds of different problems and so on. And I've taken I started to say this, I think on the last show that I did last week, taking a step back again from looking at the boards and stuff, just too many opinions about things that are taking people in the wrong direction, and trying to convert that back into some sort of sensibility is just a waste of time.
Right.
And, what I have found helpful is when I see something that I can add something positive to, what I usually do is I private message them and let it go from there, rather than getting into the urinating contest. I'm not don't have the time for that stuff.
Right.
And in all seriousness, I spent a tremendous amount of time not too long ago working on some situations with a particular group, this had to do with that osteopetrosis deal, and somebody had a contact who was a veterinarian, and he said, well, it'd be hard to find a bird anywhere that didn't have lymphoid leucosis, and that couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, that's just ludicrous. I don't care how many years he's been messing with chickens, he should at least know that much. That's why we find it and we eradicate it. So does that mean every bird has it, so we have to go around the world now and kill them all? What are you, nuts? That's what we do. When you find a line that has that is carrying that particular virus, you don't perpetuate it. There is no cure for it. Okay, so you take that line and you put it down, and you go on, clean up, and hope you don't get it back. But you don't breed to it, and all this other nonsense that people want to try to do. But at any rate, I gave up on that one. enough was said about it. There's no sense in trying to tell somebody else that somebody else is not smart. So
I'm right.
It's not worth the battle. But getting back to what we're talking about here, there isn't any question that that heat kills. Birds left unattended during the day without places to go to get in and out of the heat, you're more than likely going to end up with some really stressed birds or some mortality from that kind of thing. And again, going back and looking at them being about four times more tolerant to cold than they would be to heat. So you have a small window of opportunity to protect your birds. As the temperature rises outside, so does their need for water. Therein lies another problem. If you're not around all day long, and it's going to get real hot in the 90s plus outside, as that water approaches their body temperature, the closer and closer it gets to it, the less and less they drink of it. And when the temperature of the water reaches their body temperature, they won't drink it at all. And there may be exceptions to the rule, but on average, birds that have been observed under these conditions generally do not drink hot water. They will drink water right down to just about freezing. So their penchant for cool, fresh water is a lot better than their need for hot water, even though they need water, because, see, it isn't going to do them any good. And I think that it's probably Mother Nature's way of saying, don't drink it because it isn't going to help you anyway. Mm-hmm. It's only going to add to your body temperature. It's not going to help you, so don't drink it. And, I mean, that's just my personal observation. So from that standpoint, the temperature differentials between the hot and cold, are huge, like we said. And when they get up into this range, when you start getting above 80 degrees and they're out in the sunlight, you can start to see birds start to do open mouth breathing. And if they're running around or doing any kind of activity, then they start the panting stuff. And that is the beginnings of, birds becoming overheated. It is at least at that point that if you recognize it, you should do something about it immediately. Folks that are not home should be aware of the weather report for the particular day that they're not going to be around. If you're working every day, then you need to be aware of it every day. But, shade goes a long way to help in the situation, keep their temperature down. Good, cool, fresh water. And I know it's hard to give birds cool, fresh water. You put it out in a short period of time, it's warm again. So if you're not around to do those things, putting some ice in with it will help throughout the day, putting the water in a position where it is shaded. And not only shaded from direct sunlight above, as the sun moves around in the sky, you get the sunlight coming in from the side, baking the water in a different direction. So you might want to make sure that you have this covered in all directions and a place for the birds to go in and out so they can get their water. Any attempt is better than no attempt at all. To mitigate this thing. It's not fun to watch them die, and they do it fairly readily once they reach this point. Some of the things that you can do, shading trees are great. Lean-tos, you can make them out of anything, plywood, metal roofing material, anything that's going to keep the weather out and keep the sun from baking them directly. Places where they can get out and dust bath and help lower their body temperature. Some of the other things you start seeing with them is holding their wings out, trying to get the heat off their body. And there are a number of different things that you can do. If you're home, you can get some burlap, and you can hold that up over some water, dip it into the water, run a fan behind that, and get some evaporative cooling going.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It's
great
inexpensive.
Idea.
Yeah, it's cheap and it's inexpensive. It does cause an evaporative cooling effect. Can be a little sloppy if you think about it ahead of time and get yourself set up. It's an inexpensive way to do that. I do have available to anybody that sends me an email. The little swamp cooler thing from a cooler and so on. I do have those drawings and artist rendering available to anybody that wants to take that project on. But basically, it's a cooler with a little water pump, with some ice in the cooler, and the water circulated through that through a copper coil of wire on the front of the fan. And a fan blowing out across that creates a cool evaporative cooling effect. I would suspect that a person could probably make something like this, depending on the size of it and everything. My guess is probably under $50 in that area. But at any rate, that's something that can be done. A fan, cooling nozzles. You can go online and get them. I had them for years and still have access to them, just don't have them online anymore. Wasn't a hot seller, and once I got down to the point where I didn't have a lot of the components left, I just took it down. But these would be similar to the type of cooling device you can find at any amusement park as you're walking in or walking around. They've got these little cooling stations, and it's basically high-pressure water coming through a real tiny nozzle. That creates a fogging effect. As the water evaporates close to your body, it creates a cooling effect, which we call evaporative cooling. So that's something that people can do. It's inexpensive. you know, not hard to do at all. And, you know, will be beneficial to the birds overall as far as, you know, trying to get their overall temperature down. You can use the burlap in a dry form to use it as a shade cloth. Most of that stuff is woven pretty tight. And I know on the commercial poultry houses here, they used to use it on the curtain side of the house when they used to have curtains open. They use it so much anymore now because they don't put the curtains down except in an emergency. Everything inside is evaporative cooling and fogging. They use that kind of a technique to keep the temperature inside down during the real hot months. But, you know, anything you can do along those lines, keeping them out of the direct sunlight, keeping them hydrated with you know, cool water and those kinds of things, bearing in mind that the temperature rise to the point of death starts, you'll start to see some mortality at 112, 113 degrees body temperature. By 113, if you haven't done something, they'll probably die pretty quickly. One of the things that I wanted to talk about that I think is important, if you do find a bird who is in dire straits, one of the things to do is there's actually two things you can do, and I would do one and then the other. The one is to try to get the bird to drink some cold water. And the reasoning for this is that as that cold water goes into the body, that cold water will start to dissipate throughout the body and actually cool the body down from the inside out, which will actually help with the cooling effect that the air sacs in the bird's respiratory system will help cool that bird down a lot quicker than just putting water on the outside of the bird. But if the bird's not drinking and that kind of thing and is really in a bad way, just take the bird and immerse it in some cold water. I would want to see you put in, you know, 30-degree water. I think the shock there would be too much. But if you have a good differential, let's say you add about 60-degree water and you put a bird that's 100 degrees plus in it, I think you're going to bring that temperature down relatively quickly. But the cooling from the inside out works as well. And in certain situations, like I said, if they're not drinking, then you've got to go to the other thing. But it gives you two different options. And this is why you want to give them the cool water in the first place before you get to this point. That helps them get rid of the heat from their inner core. So there's a whole lot of things that you can do. Immersing the bird in the cold water. The things you can do to prevent it is to use the evaporative cooling, to use shade trees, to use a shady place on your premises made from either burlap cloth, technically anything that will block out the sunlight in a halfway decent fashion and give the bird some relief from that direct sunlight. Might even be a good place to put your water under that. That's nice and cool so that they'll do that. And even better if you've got a place for them to dust bath and everything at the same time. You know, all of these things, you know, taken into consideration, you know, will help. And certainly the cold water being taken in will help dissipate the hot air from the inner body, inner core, through the air sacs and get that back out. Just remember, they can't sweat like everybody else. They can't sweat, you know, just like dogs and so on. They don't sweat. So it's important that their body temperature be maintained as close to a normal body temperature as possible. When you start getting into situations where the birds start panting and really breathing heavy, this exacerbates, makes worse the dehydration process. It starts to create an electrolyte imbalance within the bird's body. And they actually start to dehydrate faster. And this is due to the amount of loss of moisture from the bird's body. Every time that bird respires and breathes out, the moisture that's being lost and not being replaced changes that pH balance in their system, and then they start losing more moisture much more quickly than they would in a non-heat situation. So giving a bird plain water at this time will exacerbate that. It dilutes the sodium and potassium levels in the bird's body, and then they start to actually dehydrate faster. Same thing goes for humans. We can use the example of being out on the desert, and when you're out on the desert and been out there without water for several days, and somebody finds you, you know, the prudent thing to do would be give you a little bit of water, but they don't load you with water. They start an IV of fluids and you know, try to get your fluid balance back in order so that you don't you know, continue to dehydrate and end up dead after somebody's tried to rescue you. So all of it plays into the same thing. Whatever you basically would do for a human in this situation, you would do for birds. And a lot of these things go for other animals that you have out there, you know, out in the barnyard. I know a lot of people raise goats and this and that and the other thing, and more than likely not as sensitive to this, but you could use some of the same. I'm sure they would enjoy having a fogging system so that they can get cool during the heat as well. Other things that you can do: put out additional waters. The more the merrier during this kind of weather. You can add vitamins, electrolytes to their water. You want to, again, we've can't actually talk about some of this stuff. If I repeat myself a little bit, it's because of the fact that I'm probably trying to drive home a point, and that is shade, I think, is your biggest helper in a lot of these things, and air movement. If you have a place that's shady and you can set up a fan that won't be detrimental to the birds and let that that fan blow across where the birds are in the shade, just sometimes the air movement will help them cool down as well and keep them from getting into these situations where they start to dehydrate on you. You can spray them down with a water hose if you've got nothing better, an old sprinkler. I can remember when I was a kid, the sprinkler was a big deal. We were miles and miles from the ocean, where we lived fairly close, but not that close. And as when we got older, we were able to walk up, but not as youngsters. So we used to get the old round sprinkler out of the garage and put it out in the middle of the lawn with a hose and cool down in that way. So you can do the same thing with birds. Add ice to their drinkers. And one of the other things that you can do is don't put their feed out for them all day long. If you want to feed them real early in the morning before it gets hot, that would be acceptable. But as the sun really starts to come up, take the feed away from them and give it to them as the sun goes down. And they'll be fine. They'll survive. And they'll have less problems during the course of the day with the heat due to the fact that their metabolism won't be giving off so much or their bodies won't be giving off so much heat from metabolizing the feed and further adding to their overall body temperature. If your birds are inside, you can use sprinklers on the roof to help bring down the temperature. Even spraying birds down outside, no matter what you use, whether it's a hose, whether it's a sprinkler, whether it's a fogging device, or whether it's a sprinkler on the roof trying to bring down the water that comes from that, can give you other problems. So be aware of that. Try to move things around if you can. Try not to let areas become so soaked with water that they become pits for coccidiosis and other disease problems that may crop up around you know, muddy type situations. Again, go back to the panting usually begins at about 80 degrees, so you get yourself geared up for you know, for the temperature that that is appropriate for your area for that day. Some other things you can do is add vitamin C to the water. You can add aspirin to the water. and you can add sodium bicarbonate to the water. I wouldn't add all of them, but if you've got one of them on hand, I would certainly do that. Keep the birds as calm as possible. If you've got a dog that likes to run with your birds, maybe you ought to put him away and leave the birds alone for a while. The more activity they have, the more body heat they're going to produce. So I would limit their activity as far as that's concerned. Increase the airflow, whether it be inside a coop or outside the coop. I know here in the next couple of weeks I'll actually have birds here, and from roosting time at night till about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, they'll be in an air-conditioned facility. And again, when I say air-conditioned, we're only talking about 76, 78 degrees, somewhere in that range. And the way this coop here is set up, there's loads of air movement in and out, so I can just circulate the air with the air conditioner, or I can circulate the air in the middle of the coop with a multiple speed fan, and then I've got a exhaust fan on the other end that pulls air across the top. So we can do a lot of things with the way this is set up here. And once we get up and rolling with it, we'll give you all the updates and stuff. The roosts are done. I got to put some nest boxes up and a few little tidy up things, and we'll be ready to roll. So
the chandelier, got to get the chandelier in there. And,
yeah, we were thinking about bidets, but we couldn't afford it. but there are a lot of things you can do. You just have to think about it. And, none of this stuff is rocket science. And the addition of some vitamin C to the drinking water will help mitigate the situation with corticosteroids and actually enhance their overall ability to dissipate heat. That has been proven. The addition of aspirin to the water has been proven to bring their temperature down as well. It's used very heavily here in the commercial poultry industry, not only during heat situations, but also during respiratory issues where birds are considered feverish. It's a liquid that you actually put in the drinking water. And mm-hmm. So, those kinds of things, are available. If you have access to a straight electrolyte compound, I'm going to give you some rough parameters, but usually you should go by whatever manufacturer's product you're buying. But you're looking at somewhere between 20 and 40 milligrams of electrolytes per day per bird. So you're looking at about a quarter of a teaspoon of an electrolyte product being put in the drinking water. This is just pure electrolytes, sodium and potassium, basically. And not vitamins. You can use the vitamins. The vitamins are great. You use a complete package, you're just as well off. But I have been asked about it by people, and it is available. It is, again, used in the commercial poultry industry very heavily during outbreaks of heat and so on to maintain that pH balance that they need.
Granny Kathy in the chat room asked, can aspirin be added with vinegar, or should we just leave the vinegar out when we're adding the aspirin? Apparently she puts apple cider vinegar in her waterer, so being that it's acidic, should she refrain from using the apple cider vinegar when she's using vitamins, electrolytes, and the aspirin, or should that be okay to add at all?
I think I would leave the apple cider vinegar out during that particular situation. There's a whole lot of controversy floats around, I understand those that like the apple cider vinegar. You got to go with what's working for you. I'm not a big fan of changing things if everything is going along okay.
I was going to change topics. I thought you were finished. Go ahead, and then I'll ask
the next question. There is no research that I'm aware of to show that putting the two together in the drinking water is helpful or detrimental. So therefore, I always opt to go the opposite way and say use them individually. because you certainly wouldn't want to. I mean, I don't think it would be harmful, but we're looking to help here and not, you know, come to a Mexican standoff. So I'm a bigger fan of saying, okay, if we're going to use the aspirin, let's go with the aspirin and leave the apple cider vinegar out until the crisis has passed, and then go back to what you were doing before. You should be okay with that.
Can you follow up about how much aspirin, and is it something you put some tablets in there and let it dissolve, or if you're adding it to the water? What I guess that's the next question from Granny Kathy.
Yeah, I would get much? Some. I would get, and I'm not sure what the. I want to say a normal aspirin is about 200 milligrams, I think.
I think it's 325 for just everyday normal.
Is it,
and
yeah,
then
okay,
you've got. You've got the regimen aspirin, which is 81 milligrams.
Yeah,
and that, comes
that one I'm familiar with. But I would take the norm is about 340 milligrams. So if the aspirin is 325, one of them in a gallon of water continuously throughout the day should be fine.
Okay.
See, we use the 81 milligram for birds that have. Mainly silkies that have wry neck, or birds that have leg problems, or birds we suspect might have some Marek's issues, and we use that in conjunction with some turmeric and that kind of stuff. So the 81s, you really can't hurt them with the aspirin. It's kind of an interesting thing, but I suggested, and folks have been doing it for a long, long time now on my suggestion. But like we'll give a bird, three or four. Of the 81 milligrams per day, just on one bird. So putting 325 milligrams or 340 milligrams per gallon of water is no big deal. It's not. You don't want to overload them with it. You're just trying to bring the temperature down a little bit and help them stabilize it. And that should do that. It should do that. If the sodium bicarb, if my memory serves me correctly, that would be about 4 grams per gallon. And you'd have to figure out what amounts to 4 grams, but it wouldn't be a whole lot. I think 1,000 milligrams is equal to a gram. So it's really not all that much.
All right. I've got 1 o'clock straight up, so we're going to take a break away here for a minute and play a few commercials and let our sponsors come in here and give their say. We're talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. We would love for you to visit him online because, in our opinion, if he doesn't have it, you don't need it. And give him a visit, www.FirstStateVetSupply.com. We'll return with more heat-related emergencies, and we return with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your chicken fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today, Monday, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It's Monday, like we said. Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, joined us today, and our topic is really heat-related emergencies and really how to prevent them and eliminating some of the myths that are out there regarding all of that. So, Peter, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, I want to just finish up here with the fact that you know, even baby chicks can... You know, can have this heat prostration problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, generally when a baby chick's born, somewhere around 103, 104 degrees, and their temperature being very unstable at that age. You know, so I've had people here recently call me in relation to you know, situation where they're too hot, too cold, and that kind of thing. So just bear in mind that they too can have the same problem, even though they're in a brooder. You want to make sure, you know, that the brooder has enough area for them to get away from the heat, and you know, so that they don't have issues, you know, piling up on each other and trying to get away from of the thing, and so on. And they too should have some vitamins, electrolytes in their water. You know, just keep an eye on them. I think that one of the things to take away from this is that. Common sense, more than anything, is your best friend in some of this stuff. It's like I said before, none of this is...
That's a lost art here in America.
Well, you know, I think
sometimes.
That...
Sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people get lost in the fact of trying so hard to do the right thing that they end up doing almost nothing. And I am a big fan of go with your heart, your mind, and your soul. Do what sounds reasonable, even though at the end of the day it may be wrong. Because sitting around watching animals, birds, or other die when something might have helped, you know, is better than nothing. You know, don't forget, when people call me, by the time they get around to me, they've been through... in many cases, veterinarians, in many cases, all kinds of antibiotics or all kinds of treatments of whatever description. And by the time they get to me, you know, they got one rock, you know, one foot on a banana peel, you know, and the other on an unstable rock. So, I mean, you know, it's difficult, you know, to assess what the real problem is, because some of the secondary problems that come in are due to all of the other issues. But I never take somebody to task that's done something, irregardless of whether it may be wrong, because that to me shows you know, more initiative than sitting back and say, oh my God, they're going to die, versus, oh my God, they're going to die, here's what I'm going to do, you know.
Right.
And so I think common sense goes a long way. Males can have I want to throw this out there too. Males, because of their testosterone levels, because of their greater, in many cases, muscle mass, can have a little bit higher body temperature. So you might even see some of this detrimental heat being a bigger deal in some of the males than you might see in some of the females. these heavily feathered birds, like and certainly some of your really bigger breeds, have a terrible time in the heat. The Jersey Giants, the Brahmas, these kinds of birds. I mean, they just about pass out and then they're gone. And it's that quick. It just comes on them, and they can't get that heat, and they can't get that breath. You know, first thing you know, they're done. So, like I say, there's a whole lot of things you can do. Smaller breeds, sometimes, again, we went back and we talked before. We said keep them calm. You know, we don't want anybody running around. If we've got a bad actor, maybe you want to, you know, pen the bad actor up by himself so he doesn't stir the rest of the flock up. But the lower you can keep their body temperature through lowered activity, and these kinds of things, the better off the whole group is going to be as a whole. And, you know, everybody will be happy at the end of the day. You won't have mortality. You won't have all these other problems that are associated with it. You know, I just can't emphasize enough common sense. And if you can't do anything, if you're not around all day long, put out the coldest water you can put out, put it in a shady spot, give the birds plenty of room to get out of that heat. I would even consider putting a small, not too deep tub in their pen so that they can at least get in the water. If that water is at least in the shade, you're going to help them hold their body temperature down. They'll get in and out of it if they want it. And again, a place to go and take a nice dust bath and help lower that body temperature. Get down into that dirt, down where it's cooler. The wet burlap. Those that want to send me an email, it's free again this year, like always. The artist renderings of what this swamp cooler thing would look like, and you can go from there and decide how you want to build it. But it's a good, solid picture. I think somebody last year got it from me, and they said, oh, you know, they were surprised. They thought it was going to be something that, you know, didn't really give as good a look as it did. But it's nice. It's not going to be a parts list and everything else, but there aren't a whole lot of things to it. So some tubing, some clamps, some wire ties, a fan. I'm sure you could use a 5-gallon bucket or so in place of a cooler. It really doesn't matter. The cooler would keep the water colder longer, but you know, something is better than nothing. And if money's an issue. Yeah.
How about the folks that are out there that are listening? We've gone through this list of things, and they may not have any studies. They have not seen any studies. It may just be rumor or something that happened to a different animal or something. But there's got to be folks out there that are listening when we talk about, when you talk about misters, about the, if there are any negative health effects to that being, now we've got high humidity, maybe a more spreading of disease, more airborne disease. It's just sticky and hot, and now we've got humidness and wet conditions versus just being a dry, hot versus. I mean, what? Because I know there's some folks out there thinking about that. About, oh well, if you put misters in, respiratory issues or this, you know, spread disease more easy. What say you to those folks?
The type of mister we're talking about, the higher the pressure, the better, and then the smaller the nozzle flow. You know, you can get these things, that are down to, 1/2 gallon per hour in mist.
Mm-hmm.
I think we gave people different combinations. I think we went up as high as at one time as high as 4 gallons just for people that, you know, wanted it that way. But, you know, the higher the pressure you put on that, the greater the mist is. And that's all you really want. And for all intents and purposes, at the end of the day, you know, they do work better in a lower humidity environment. There isn't any question about that. But, again, we go back to talking about something being better than nothing. And, they're not hard to make. I mean, you know, you can go online and find the little nozzles. They're only little plastic. They all come out of China now. They're not a big deal. I don't get mine from China. I get them I get them right here from the poultry supply house here that deals in poultry equipment. And just go over there and buy them by the thousand. But they have all different kinds of nozzle flows for different types of situations within these chicken houses. Some of them are outside nozzles where they spray the water on a cooling pad, and then a fan blows through that, and that air goes into the chicken house. And then there's other foggers that are right in the chicken house, and when it gets really hot, then they turn those on too. And it does bring their temperature down, because they're shooting for a temperature. When the outside temperature is up in the 90s and stuff, they're wanting something down below 80. They want down to 70s if they can get it. So they've spent a lot of time. They've got tunnel ventilation inside these houses now that moves air evenly all the way down the chicken house from one end to the other, and there's several of them across with high-speed fans. It's pretty sophisticated. When a farmer has to spend $150,000 plus to put chickens in, and the chicken house is more expensive than the house he's living in, it's something to be said for it. But it's all computerized, all modernized. The fans come on and off to get all these things going. So, but anyway, getting back to it, moving it around, just misting the water over top of them is not going to cause them to have a respiratory issue. The issue comes in when their immune system is being compromised by corticosteroids from stress, from heat. So if you prevent it in the first place, you generally don't have it. If the ground starts to get a little wet or too wet or can't absorb the moisture being put out, change the nozzle flow or increase the pressure so that you don't have that kind of water buildup. But or don't use that system at all. If that bothers you, coccidiosis is a problem. And when birds shed it and their droppings, and you add water to it and you add heat to it, it does lend itself to a tremendously great environment for the coccidiosis to take off. There isn't any question about that. But it has to be a fine balance between the two. For instance, if I were to have an area where I had a mister, and I saw that it was getting wet, or what I consider too wet, water starting to build and not drain, I would then move it to some other location, and I would try to box that area off till I could get back to it, and maybe I would take a little bit of hydrated lime and spread it over top of that, okay? And maybe work that into that soil to try to dry it up a little bit, and that'll help kill off any organisms that are in that soil because it dramatically changes the pH. Bear in mind, when you're using that kind of stuff, you can't let the birds stand directly on that lime. It will burn their feet. But I've had loads and loads of people use that stuff, and it's not your regular garden variety lime. This is a particular lime. It's called pickling lime in some places. It's called burnt lime in some places, hydrated lime in other places. Generally, you can get it at any store, any farm supply that generally sells seed and those kinds of things that fertilizes to the farmers, co-ops, and that kind of stuff. They'll have it. It usually comes in an 80-pound bag. I've never seen it in a 50-pound bag. It's always in an 80-pound bag. So, I haven't had it in years myself, so it might be in a 100-pound bag for all I know. But I know it's available, I instruct a lot of people who raise quail to do the same thing. They have problems with quail enteritis quite severely. Once it takes a foothold, it's real nasty. It goes right through their bird pretty quickly. So there are things you can do. And again, common sense, prudence. Something's not working for you, change it. Don't continue on a path that's not good for what you're doing. Not everything is going to be conducive to everybody's operation. Here we're going to be looking at many, many different things over the course of the years coming, trying out different things, even our roost material and stuff that we're looking at. In my eyes, it should work. In the eyes of a chicken, they might say, I don't want to stand on this stuff. I don't know. We'll find out. And that's what part of this is all about, and we'll change things around to suit the birds. And once you find out what they're comfortable with, it's a lot easier to then go forward and spend your money. But, we shall see. You know, I've got these grazing frames that I made out there. I'm hoping that turns out to be a home run rather than a dud. Who knows? You know, I think it's going to be great. I can't see it not, but I'm not a chicken. But I can see it working very well as the grasses and grains and whatever that are below that sprout up through the half-inch by one wire, which will prevent them from falling in and will prevent them from digging down in there and tearing everything all to pieces, and allow the stuff to grow up and allow them to get, you know, basically the best part of it, which is a shoot at the top. So, as far as your question is concerned, I think I've answered as best as possible. You have to just, again, do what's okay for you. I can understand people saying, well, you know, fix one problem, create another. From my perspective, I would much rather treat a case of coccidiosis than have a bunch of dead birds around, because that's the end result of the heat prostration problem. I suspect that July and August and stuff, and even September around most places, is going to be pretty ugly. So at least that's what most of the forecasters are predicting, that this could be a real issue this year in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're trying to talk about it now before it gets rolling. And I'm sure I'll hear from some people that they've lost some birds due to heat and so on. But from my perspective, it could be prevented. And we intend to do the same thing here. If these birds are coming from an area where they're probably used to temperature at least on a daily basis of 5 degrees or so cooler. When they get here, it's going to be a little bit different, a little bit more humidity here compared to where they were coming from. So we'll have to monitor them close and see what's going on.
Do the I know that the big commercial houses that I see around here, that are 200 feet long, what have you, that they consistently have the fans on one end and then blowing, and fans on the other, and just are sucking that wind from one end of that long house all the way to the other.
Yep.
And do you know, since you were in that industry, do they have kind of like the greenhouse? I know a lot of times greenhouses would have honeycomb down there, and water would drip through the honeycomb, like you talk about swamp cooler and things, and then it would suck the air through that, and that would produce nice, cool air. Or is that just, hey, are they just taking the outside air and just creating air movement to keep the birds comfortable?
Both.
Okay.
In the times when it's not all that hot, they're moving air and moisture out in the what they call tunnel. It's a tunnel ventilation. It's a tube that that goes down the entire length of the chicken house, and several of them. And the on the outside generally. I haven't been in one lately. They've made a lot of changes since I've gotten out of that aspect of it. But on the outside of it, they've got a place where these cardboard cooling fins are, and that water goes over that and is either sucked into the house or blown into the house from there. But they've got loads of fans.
Tons.
And they try to be efficient. Look, and I've said this before, it doesn't matter whether you are Tyson, Purdue, or Joe Blow raising chickens in the backyard. Dead birds don't pay bills. I don't care who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And, they spend a lot of time and effort and money keeping them alive and keeping them as comfortable as they can. Don't forget, every day you have to feed those chickens is another day you're not making profit.
Mm-hmm.
And, they grow for all kinds of different markets, small bird market, big bird market, and so on. Different fried chicken places have different sized chickens that they actually order in so that the pieces are consistently sized. So you don't get one drumstick that's 7 inches long and you get another one that's 2.5. They spend a lot of time and effort, and this is not a defense of what they are and what they do. It's a conversation about how it all works. And, in that they move a lot of air, and for the most part they don't have the mortality that they once had. I mean, it was not uncommon years ago to have them just die like flies, stack them up outside like cordwood, and they weren't happy about it either. But not much they could do about it under the, under the growing type conditions that they have.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah,
yes,
it is.
It's just kind of like people, you know, we've had, I remember a couple of years ago, and we had a commercial farmer on, and he had millions. I mean, the number of chickens he had at his one farm was staggering, many, many millions. And he raised on that same farm, he would have different houses for different producers, different companies, different labels on the chicken, but they were all going to the same store, including organic. He had some that were labeled free range because, you know, he said, hey, if I have all these chickens, I'll make money from everybody. I'll deal with the Tyson. I'll deal with Spring. You know, so he had on his farm. It was very interesting. And he said that he could document, it was proven fact for him at his farm, that he lost more birds due to death on any given day in the free range houses than he did, talking about layers here, I guess at this point, on this comment, because he'd raised both, than he did with the caged birds that people are up in arms with, because even though they were beak trimmed, they would still be cannibalism issue. You know, you've got a cannibalism issue with the cages. There's what, 6 or 8 birds in that small cage. Granted, again, we're not going down that road about right and wrong and people's beliefs, but versus this free range, the term legally free range, those birds have access to the outside and that little, you know, door the size of a basketball on one end of the building, and if they choose, quote unquote, to go outside, they do on a concrete pad and enclosed in a fence, but they can be labeled. So he raised them all, and he said, you know, I have on a regular basis go in and pick up dead birds more so due to, if you want to call them, inhumane conditions for cannibalism in these free-range houses than I ever do in the where they're in those bad cages that we don't like. So he loses more that way. So yeah, it's interesting how, and I say that because you talked about the technology years past, you know, stacking the dead chickens up like cordwood versus now, it's more minimal based on some of the things they've done and the advancements they've made. Still not the typical what people think when they see the free range on the egg carton, beautiful green pastures and a red barn and yellow daisies and happy go chickens hopping through eating little flying bugs, but less lost today than then. And I like your point that dead chickens don't pay the bills, whether you're a backyard breeder or the big boys. And
I think if you look at this whole situation, and I don't want to get into a contest over one versus the other, but you know, look at how we got here. You know, I hear people all of the time, say to me, "Well, big pharma this, big pharma that," I understand it. I understand where I think they think they're coming from. So then, in my own mind, it's okay. Let's eliminate big pharma tomorrow. Just everybody who needs their pills, just quit buying them.
Right.
You see, you know, it's always, I don't like the high price of medications either. But, I'm in the same situation here. I have a shipment of oil of oregano hung up in customs as usual. They're treating this stuff like it is cocaine. Okay. I'm serious. It has been there since middle of last week. And you've seen the stuff before, Andy. I showed you all
right,
shared everything with you. You know, I'm not pulling nobody's chain, but I'm still waiting now. It's sitting at the DHL hub in Cincinnati since the middle of last week, okay? And waiting now, after customs got done with it, they decided that they need FDA approval now to move it on. So here we go again. You know, for some stupid thing
oil of oregano.
Yep, yep. A product that is European Union approved. It's got all the approvals over there. Somebody say, well, you know, and I've said it before, you know, what they do over there is different there. But we're not talking about antibiotics here. We're talking about, we're not talking about something that somebody made in their bathtub okay, and on the QT, and it's, you know, this and that and the other thing. This has a complete chemical analysis of what's in it, you know, all accompanying the whole thing. So, you know, our system here, in my own opinion, and I'm sure there are people that will argue with me, it's so broken, so disjointed. That's what's causing us all of the grief. And here's the other side of it. You come up with a cure for some illness, and we want to fast track it through FDA. They go on their fast track and they approve it, and the first person that dies from it, you'll be a SOB, they'll be an SOB, and should have never done that in the first place. And then all those people that are the naysayers come out of the woodwork. You know, it just boggles my mind. So, you know, look at how did we get to where we're at? We got to where we're at as we became a so-called more sophisticated society. More and more people went to work. Okay, you know, if you go back and look back, probably before the 50s, there weren't that many women that worked in out of the household. As we progressed past that. And my timeline might be a little off by a few years. Really doesn't matter, but I'm just giving an example. And as people got, you know, male, female, doesn't matter, got into the marketplace, there wasn't any time then for anybody to have a real garden in the backyard. There wasn't any time to have some chickens and a turkey and everything else, or a calf, and like you used to have maybe back then. We got away from that. The same reason that, in my eyes, that a lot of people talk about buying American, but when it comes to buying that higher priced stuff, they'll opt for the Chinese stuff almost all the time. Now that I'm not saying everybody. I don't want to get 90 emails saying that, you know, they buy. I understand it, but I'm telling you that's how it works. The more sophisticated society we became, the more money we needed, the more money was paid per hour for jobs or whatever it is. Okay, it's not all of it, but it's a good portion of it. You're not going to go over here and buy that $100 blanket when you can get something else that's going to be just as warm in your eyes for $50 down at Walmart. You're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just not going to do it. You know, and perfect example of that is the wool blanket manufacturer in Faribault, Minnesota, that went out of business more than several years ago. Okay, what'd they go out of business for? Because nobody wants to spend all that money for a blanket made in America out of wool. They just don't. They are back in business now, okay, and I've patronized their business because of some of the things that they make that I happen to like. But you will pay for it, and that's all there is to it. You will pay for it.
Well, someone had posted a picture. I had talked about this maybe on the show the other day, and I posted on a comment on Facebook. It was a picture of free-range chicken house, commercial chicken house, mind you, but it was free-range, and it was just a picture from one end to the other, and it was white as snow, packed in there, you know, broiler to broiler to broiler to broiler, and the comment was like, free-range, they said, it'll be better, they said, or something like that, you know, and then I put, in my view, plain, because people were complaining, oh, this should never happen, and this horrible conditions, all this. I'm glad I have my own chickens, da da da. And so I just put on there, and I was like, plain and simple, this is caused because you people want 99-cent nugget meals at Wendy's. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I mean, because I've asked,
yeah.
I have when you've had them on, Peter, I have asked them. I said, look, I would ask the folks that want to come on and want the grass-fed, free-range, anti-cage, anti-commercial farms. I'm like, if we did it your way, number one, could we feed the world? Number two, would nugget meals go from 99 cents to, you know, to $6.95? You know, and so then what's going to happen when, oh, it's not 99 cents, it's $6.95, what are you talking about? Well, because these chickens were raised more humanely, they were on pasture, and so this guy's like, I want my 99 cent nuggets. So that was my comment, was that, I mean, there's a lot more to it than that, but I feel like one huge reason for this that you see this picture is people want their 99-cent chicken nuggets at the fast food joint, or they want the $3.99 rotisserie chicken, lemon peppered, prepared for them at Publix. I mean, you walk in and there's $3.99 chickens there that are ready to eat, rotisserie with lemon pepper and barbecue and original, $3.99. And that's why. So if you want to pay $14.95 for that chicken, great. I'm sure more, you know, they'd be happy to take your money. But that was my take on that. I mean, it goes a lot deeper than that. But for, I think one of the biggest reasons is that. And we've had them on, and of course the big commercial farms were like, no, we couldn't feed the world doing it the way your other guest wants us to do it. And then they were ask your other guest if they'd be on your listeners, would they be willing to pay $7.95 for a meal at McDonald's for six chicken nuggets, or you know, $12.95 or $9.95 for that rotisserie chicken they're paying $3.99 for now? And the answer is probably no. Just like we talked about. So it's again, double-edged sword. We're not going to solve all the problems of the world today, I can assure you. So, but
no,
interesting.
And I don't intend to. And those people who want to do all those other things, you know, I'm just pointing out something that, from my perspective, as I see it, you know, I mean, let's do this. Let's close all commercial chicken farms tomorrow that are growing birds in cages or under these conditions that are being purported all around. Let's close them all tomorrow, every one of them. I mean, if that's what we want to do, let's do it, you see. And then where are we going to be? That's the other issue. Then what are you going to do, import your chicken from China? My point is, I don't think it's sustainable the other way around. I've seen a lot of these operations that are organic, and they have trouble, you know, because some of these seeds and stuff are supposed to be hardier and everything else. They're not drought tolerant like any other seed. There may be some out there. I'm just, you know, talking out of my realm here for sure. But you know, I've been involved in CSAs and stuff, and the people have been growing stuff organically and for a long period of time and everything else. And one crop failure after another, the seeds didn't germinate for one reason or another, and so on and so forth. You can't sustain you know, any kind of food chain in that way. And that's how we became where we are. I'm just trying to point out how we got where we are. How we fix it is another story. You know, and it isn't as easy as I think a lot of people would purport. You know, I'm for treating every animal, human or otherwise, with dignity and respect. And but I think that there are ways to do it. And I think that if people really had a good opportunity to look at a well-run poultry operation, they would see that a lot of the so-called atrocities don't happen. You know, and that's not to say that in some places that they don't. Having been on the other side of the fence, I can tell you stories, but about things that people do, because people are cruel in this world. There are cruel people everywhere, so you know, it's pretty hard to stop that. But
yeah. Well, thanks for coming on as always. Great topic, sure. Very timely topic as we here in mid June, and we have still July and of course August to get through, and some of the hottest parts of the country. So hopefully, lots of notes were taken during today's show. And as always, we look forward to having you back next Monday, and we always appreciate you coming on and sharing your vast knowledge.
Sure. If anybody's got any questions, they shoot me an email, chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com, or if they want that. Artist rendering of that swamp cooler deal, I'll be glad to send that free of charge as well.
That sounds awesome. Take advantage of that, folks, because free is as free can be. So, and it may give you some ideas about keeping your chickens cool this summer for minimal cost.
Yep.
So,
Peter,
thanks so
much. We don't keep your email and send you advertisements either. We don't do that. So, just so you know.
No, it's something people are concerned about too. So, very good. Well, hey, thanks so much. You have a great week, and we'll see you next Monday.
All right, Andy. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you so much. Go visit them right now, www.firststatevetsupply.com, www.firststatevetsupply.com. If they don't have it, you don't need it. And free stuff. Doesn't get any better than that, and that's chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com. Get those artist renderings of a swamp cooler that you could do keep your chickens cool this summer. How cool is that? So that's going to wrap up another great episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you here tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody. Thank you.
Oh.